Again, that's only about 6 super tampons your entire period. Or same thing with an overnight pad will hold about 12 mils of blood as well. So about 6 super or overnight pads for the entire period. And actually at that event that I was speaking on, when I said this, like I would say over 50% of the audience gasped because they were like, whoa, that is me, and I had no idea. And then when I got talking about what this actually means, there were so many light bulbs that went off for them. Like, oh, okay, so yes, this is happening to me, and I also have really bad PMS. So, and then these connections started to make a lot more sense.
Hi, I'm Claire Goodwin, and this is the PCOS Nutritionist Podcast. I have PCOS too, and I know how hard it can be to get the help you need. So I bring together my expertise as a registered nutritionist and exercise scientist, together with other experts I trust and people with real life lived experience of PCOS, to help you get the information you need to make a real difference to your symptoms. I'm super excited to announce the release of our new PCOS management app, Ovi. As someone who has PCOS, I saw firsthand how much hyper-personalized tweaks to my lifestyle had a dramatic impact on solving my PCOS symptoms. As a registered nutritionist and exercise scientist, I saw the same effect for many of my patients. But I also saw that only seeing me once a month or even every few weeks just didn't work for most people. Changing what we eat, how we move, and sometimes the very essence of who we are, like being a perfectionist, is really tricky. And in order to see real change, we need constant support and reinforcement. And we also need tools like recipes, workouts, and cheat sheets right in our pocket. So when we're in the midst of standing in the supermarket aisle, we know what to choose to help support our changes. My PCOS Protocol group program was an amazing start in helping to achieve this, but I knew we could do way better. I knew that we could get even more personalized, convenient, and provide an elevated user experience for you. So this is why I created Ovi, to give you your personalized PCOS pathway that's based off your symptoms and your goals right in your pocket so that you can access it at any time. And not just created by me, but by an incredible team of nutritionists, psychologists, physiotherapists, exercise physiologists, and more. So head over to our website, ovi.io, that's ovie.io, and take the questionnaire. It's completely free, and you'll find out what's driving your PCOS, or what I formerly referred to as your PCOS root cause. I can't wait for you to be part of the Ovi community.
Today's podcast sponsor, Organic Initiative, is a firm favourite of mine. I have been using their products for 7+ years now. If you haven't heard of them, they make the most incredible certified organic tampons, pads and liners, and my favourite menstrual cups. I started using their organic tampons about 7 years ago as a way to reduce my exposure to environmental toxins, and I quickly moved to their menstrual cups to reduce my load on the environment. But what I wasn't expecting was just how convenient having one of their cups would be. If you haven't used a menstrual cup before, you are in for a treat. Just imagine never having to worry if you have enough tampons again. All you need is one cup for your entire period. It's also great because you don't have to have different tampons for different levels of flow. You can use the same product throughout your cycle, and we'll talk about why that's important in this podcast. So you can find their full range of organic tampons, pads, and liners at oi4me.com. That's oi4me.com. Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode. Today, Annabelle and I are talking all about heavy periods. So lots of questions about heavy periods. Lots of people with PCOS get heavy periods. So today, we're just going to go through what actually defines a heavy period. It is, and I'll give you a spoiler alert, it's way less than what you think. Like way less blood loss. And so I think a lot of you listening to this will be like, wow, didn't actually know that that was me, and that I kind of, this was a really big red flag for what is happening inside my body. So I think that's the great thing about periods, that they can tell us a lot about actually what's happening hormonally, and we can use that to then make some changes, which then not only affect like periods, but then maybe our PMS symptoms and other symptoms that we never thought were connected. Mm-hmm. So we'll go through all of that. and then answer a lot of questions that we've had, and also how I treat patients that have got heavy periods.
So you say a lot of people might not know that they have heavy periods. So what defines a heavy period?
Well, thank you for asking. Let me refer to my post-it note. This is the one note that I made for today because I wanted to make sure I got this right in terms of how many tampons or pads. Because I think that that's like when you hear about mils, so it doesn't actually mean much. We go, what does that actually look like?
Yeah, I would not know.
Yeah, so a heavy period is actually defined as approximately, there's no one number, but the number that I go off is more than 80 mils of blood loss. But what does it actually look like? Well, that's, if you use a menstrual cup, that's actually a lot easier to visualize because a menstrual cup tends to be about 25 mils or for the larger ones, or 15 mils for the smaller ones. And side note about menstrual cups, the larger ones, and I was talking to Claire, the CEO of Organic Initiative, who are our sponsor for today, about this, and she was like, and I didn't even really, really probably realise this either. She said a lot of people think that their bigger cups are for heavier periods, but actually they're not. They're for people that have been sexually active or have had a baby and therefore their vaginal canal is a bit wider. Mm. Whereas, and therefore the cup needs to be bigger to kind of like suction onto the edge of that. So the smaller cups are actually for younger, like teenagers. So even though I'm saying larger cup, smaller cup, this has got nothing to do with how much like blood you lose and therefore which one you should use. You should use a larger cup depending more on your age and sexual activity. So that is, if you are using a cup, you can kind of see on the box, sometimes they even have it on the outside, how many mils that is, so you can immediately see. Or what you could do is fill it up with water from a measuring cup and see. But generally the larger ones will be about 25 mils. So if you're using a menstrual cup, 80 mils, if you're using 25 mil one, that's actually only just over 3 full menstrual cups
worth of blood loss. That's per cycle.
That's your entire cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good, like, good clarification there. That's, this is 80 mils is for your entire period. I mean, I know, like, that I could easily go through 3 cups within the first 2 days, right? So, like, this is, yeah, I was a bit shocked myself when I was actually preparing this information for a presentation I did for Eamon Sportswear a few weeks ago. And when I looked back through, I was like, oh, wow, actually, this is me. This is me now, and I hadn't really thought about that. So if you don't use a menstrual cup, you use tampons or pads. This is 80 mils. So each tampon, like a super tampon, will hold about 12 mils of blood. So again, that's only about 6 super tampons your entire period. Or same thing with an overnight pad will hold about 12 mils of blood as well. So about 6 super or overnight pads for the entire period. And actually at that event that I was speaking on, when I said this, like I would say over 50% in the of the audience gasped because they were like, whoa, that is me, and I had no idea. And then when I got talking about what this actually means, there were so many light bulbs that went off for them, like, oh, okay, so yes, this is happening to me, and I also have really bad PMS. So, and then these connections started to make a lot more sense. Does that surprise you? 6 super tampons for your entire period.
No way. Maybe it's just me assuming. If you have a heavy period, like, would you have a long period as well?
No, good question. A lot of people can have very heavy periods, but it's like 1 or 2 days of really heavy bleeding and then very light and then it kind of ends. So yes, some people can have actually really long periods as well. So again, what's normal there is no more than 7 days. If it's more than 7 days, it's very, very unlikely to be a period that's due to ovulation, which is what a period is. It's more actually likely to be intermenstrual bleeding, which means that you haven't ovulated, your hormones, your body's been trying to ovulate, but it just hasn't quite got there. And then when those hormones are kind of coming down, that leads to shedding of the lining. And that can often be longer than 7 days, often like 10 days. Some people even say like 2 weeks they'll bleed for. Mm. So that would be a red flag if it's more than 7 days. Mm. But yeah, a lot of people, it's only like 3 or 4 days, but it can be really super heavy in those first few days.
So if your period's going past like 7 days, could you like assume that you're not ovulating?
I think that it would be worthwhile getting someone to have a look at that for you and like testing that, maybe testing your progesterone and just seeing what that is to confirm, especially if that's important to you, if you're trying to get ovulation back, or if you're really struggling with these, with other symptoms, is then looking at it and going, yeah, this is not an ovulatory period. Mm-hmm. So if you're on any kind of hormonal birth control, it almost certainly won't be an ovulatory period. If you're on the pill, it absolutely won't be. The combined pill. If you're on the Mirena, it may be, very unlikely, but it may be. But yeah, it's mostly what we're talking about here is people that aren't on hormonal birth control. But yeah, if you are on, that's probably another good one to say, if you are on hormonal birth control and you're getting more than 80 mils of blood loss, then it's a bit of a red flag that hormonal birth control is probably not the right type for you, and maybe swapping that out. So what we're probably going to be talking about here is more the fixes for people that aren't on hormone birth control that are getting the heavy periods. So the fix, though, if you are, is go back to your doctor and tell them. And there's probably a different, because every hormonal birth control has different ingredients, and it's just that those ingredients aren't working for you if you're getting that much blood loss.
So taking into consideration you're not on hormonal birth control, what does a normal cycle look like?
Yeah, so a normal, like, so what we call a cycle is a full cycle, full menstrual cycle. So from day one of your bleeding until the day before you start bleeding again. So what is normal for a full cycle is about, in terms of days, the 23 to 35 days long, anywhere between that. Where you ovulate approximately from anywhere from about day 12 to day 16 or 18, and then you have at least 11 days, ideally 14 days after you've ovulated before you get your period. That's optimal. That means that you've ovulated, you've had a good amount of time to produce estrogen and get a good quality egg, and your body hasn't tried to ovulate more than once. And then you have a good, what's called luteal phase, which is where your body produces progesterone, and that is long enough to actually produce good amounts of progesterone, and then kind of come down when it realizes that you're not pregnant, come down and then shed that lining, getting ready for that next cycle to ovulate. So of that, that's the full cycle. Of that, the first, it's normal to bleed anywhere from that day one to day seven. And in that, it's probably more normal to have a couple of light days, a couple of heavier days, a couple of medium days, but lose no more than 80 mils of blood, right? That's optimal. And then, but also you want to be having to use more than just like a panty liner. Because if you're only having to use a panty liner, that's also a red flag that you're not ovulating, and that's not a period, that's an intermenstrual bleed.
Yeah.
It's also probably a little bit of a red flag if you're spotting more than a few days before you get your period. So if you're spotting for a few days and then your like actual period starts, that also might need to be addressed, just depends. But that could be a red flag that progesterone is just coming down a little bit too quickly or isn't being sustained. So again, if combined with other symptoms like PMS, PMDD symptoms, which we'll talk about a bit later what those are, and or like fertility challenges, that's definitely where we would want to look into those a bit more. Yeah, so that's kind of like what a normal cycle and a normal period looks like.
So if you are like spotting before your period comes, does that mean that you're not ovulating as well?
No, not necessarily. What generally happens there is when your body ovulates, it produces an egg. and that egg is surrounded by something called the corpus luteum, which is like a sac, and it's that sac that actually produces progesterone. So if we don't, if the egg is not as great a quality, then the corpus luteum also won't be like a nice juicy thick like sac, like thick, I don't know, that's just a good way to visualize it, and therefore it won't have enough progesterone then to hold, because it's progesterone really that holds that uterine lining intact, stopping it shedding. So when it starts to kind of like break away, you imagine it like kind of like breaking away, that's what spotting is. And so if you don't have enough progesterone to kind of hold everything together, what we want, kind of want, is it to hold it, and then sort of collapse rather than just sort of like starting to break away. And so that would be more, what I'm saying is that you very highly likely are ovulating, especially if everything else is, you don't have any of those other red flags, like you're not bleeding for more than 7 days, or you're not, you having to use more than just a panty liner, like all of those things. The only red flag is that you are spotting for a few days, then it's highly likely that you are, but it's just that maybe that ovulation is not as great a quality, or you're older than 35 is another kind of time where that progesterone can start to decline, or your body, you've had a longer cycle, which means, so more than 35 days, which means that your body's had to try to ovulate more than once and hasn't been successful. That can be the other reason why the egg quality is a little bit lower. Mm-hmm. And when we often see that that second phase and the progesterone just not able to hold that lining, and it starts to kind of break down, and that's what leads to the spotting. So that's why I'm saying it can be a bit of a red flag, especially if it's more for a few days. If it's like 1 day of spotting and then period, quite normal. If it's a few days of spotting, maybe let's look into that.
Yeah, it just means the qualities.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, good, or maybe. Well, it kind of means that the progesterone is not where it should be. Like your progesterone is not as high for as long as what it should be. So really, once you've ovulated and your body releases that egg and that corpus luteum, that should then mean optimally you should have 14 days before you start bleeding. Mm-hmm. So if you don't, well, at least 11 days, but ideally more like 14 days. Mm-hmm. And that's like optimum. So if it's if you don't have that, meaning that that lining starts to shed earlier, then yeah, we look at what that problem is, which is then, okay, yeah, progesterone is a little bit low. Why is progesterone low? And then that's where we go back and go, okay, what's happening here? Is it quality? Is it that your body's tried to ovulate many times, therefore, like, quality? Is it age, and therefore, do we need to support that with a little bit of, like, progesterone therapy? What is that?
So the period blood, what actually is it made up of?
So your period blood is that lining that forms in your uterus. So if you imagine, or even Google it now, female reproductive organs or something like that, and you look inside and you will see the uterus, there is a lining in that builds up every cycle. So during the first half of our, or the first, before we ovulate, so in people with longer cycles that could be many months, our body's producing a lot of estrogen, and that is what's laying down that that tissue, that lining. And this is why periods often don't look just like blood. They might have clots in them. You might be able to like see physical tissue in them, is because that is literally what it is. And that is forming this lining in the uterus, which then gives, it's like a nest. So if your egg, once it's released, once you ovulate, if it is fertilized, then that little egg will kind of burrow into that lining. It's like a little nest. Like imagine that we're birds and we lay an egg, and then, you know, we've kind of built this nest, and then we sit down and we lay the egg. That's pretty much what we do. Mm-hmm. We build up this lining in our uterus. We then release the egg, and then if that egg's fertilized, it will then burrow into that nest, and then that's what creates a pregnancy. So if our body gets the message that we're not pregnant, then it will, I wrote this in my book, it's basically like the most dramatic person you've ever met who's just like, what a waste. Okay, like I built, spent all this time like building this nest and we're not even pregnant, so I'm just going to burn this whole thing down and then start again. Mm-hmm. And so that's literally what we do. We like just trash the whole thing and like, right, I'm starting again. And then so that's why it's called a cycle, because then like that next cycle, it goes through that whole process again.
Yeah.
So you imagine that. You imagine a bird actually when it's like builds up this nest and then it goes lay the egg and then it's like, ugh, not fertilized. Okay, I'm just going to, you know, and it trashes that and then it goes around and collects up like new sticks and things like that. That's literally what our body is doing every cycle. And so when we shed that, like when we get a period, that is what we're shedding. We are literally burning down that nest and then restarting again. So the things that, what forms this is estrogen is the main hormone that actually forms that lining, but it's not the only one. So insulin also has a big role to play in terms of how thick that lining is as well. So if we have higher insulin, then this lining will be thicker. And same thing if we have higher estrogen, or so higher estrogen can mean that our body is producing more estrogen or recirculating that estrogen, because the only way we can actually get rid of estrogen is through our feces, our poo. So if we have some gut issues there, we're constipated, we don't have great gut bacteria, we actually recirculate that, we reabsorb that estrogen. And this can lead to higher estrogen levels in the body as well. So this is like, really, like I'm giving you all of the like complexity of this. It's quite a complex thing. But also too, if you've got really long cycles, so if you've got like a 60-day cycle, what's happening there, it's not that your body's just not doing anything in those 60 days. It is. It's literally trying to ovulate every week or 10 days. It'll literally go through this process of picking a little follicle, baby egg, and going, right, I choose you to be the dominant egg. And it'll put all its energy, literally all its eggs into that one basket and try and grow that egg. And then if once it gets to ovulating, if our hormones aren't optimal for that to ovulate, or if that egg is just not quite the right size, then our body will just be like, oh, you failed, and discard that one and then pick a new egg to grow. And so it'll literally go through this process every week or 10 days. And so to do that, it's using estrogen to build that egg. And so it'll be producing quite high amounts of estrogen for 30, you know, so normal in an optimal cycle, that should be between about 14, 12 to 16 days. And someone who's got a 60-day cycle, that'll be more like doing that for 45, 46 days. Right, so you see just how much more time your body is producing estrogen. So yeah, there can be a lot of factors that go into what can cause heavier bleeding. But one thing that can be is if you've got long cycles and your body's just producing estrogen for that much longer, or if you've got high insulin as well. And again, your body, when you've got high insulin, it causes you to lay down more of that lining. And this is why doctors are so hot on people with PCOS being on birth control, is that if you're on birth control, you're not producing estrogen, and so you're not laying down that. It's a very controlled, so you're instead, your body's being given a synthetic form called ethinyl estradiol, but in a very controlled amount, and so it is not being given that signal to keep producing estrogen and keep trying to ovulate, and therefore that lining doesn't get as thick. So that's why I'm saying if you're on hormonal birth control and you're getting really heavy periods, that ingredient's not right for you. Go back to your doctor, be like, hey, like, what's going on here? This is I'm, you know, losing more than 80 mils of blood, like, yeah. there's something else that's not quite right here. So what we really, that's why doctors are so hot on that, because it does control that a lot more. But what I disagree with is I disagree that that's the only way we can do that. There is so many, you know, if we take that, if we understand what's driving that, then we actually look at that person and be like, right, for you, what are your drivers? Is it that you do have really long cycles? If so, okay, why? Like, what are the drivers of that? Is it in PCOS? Is it insulin resistance? Is it stress hormones? Is it inflammation? Is it hypothyroidism? What are those things for you? And then let's actually fix that. Same thing, is it insulin? Okay, let's fix that. Because if we don't, the ramifications long term are far more than just periods. And even for now, it's far more than that. It's hirsutism or facial body hair growth. It's longer term fertility challenges. It is weight, potentially weight gain. It's potentially acne. Like, there are so many things. And then long term, it's potentially gestational diabetes, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, like you name it, in terms of chronic conditions that are connected with insulin resistance. So this is where, like, I understand where your doctor's coming from when they're saying you need to be on the pill to, if they've said to you, you need to be on that to prevent endometrial cancer. One of the things that can lead to endometrial cancer is that thickening of the endometrial lining. That's one of the things. But endometrial cancer is actually quite, even in PCOS, even with a higher risk, it's still very rare. And we did a podcast on this a while back. And we also know that hormonal birth control does actually increase the risk of breast cancer, which is far more common. So we're potentially treating the one very rare thing, but giving you higher risk for another much more common thing. So, and plus all of the other things that we know are connected to insulin resistance, not actually fixing the problem. So this is why I agree with them that, yes, the pill, you know, can be used for that, but it is certainly not your only choice, and it is certainly not the best for long term, and your other symptoms as well. In many cases, in some cases, it's absolutely the best thing, but in lots of cases, it's not.
That's just got me thinking about how if you do go with PCOS to the doctors, and they often can say to you about the pill regulating your cycles. So, like, I mean, you would, if you went on and you like had heavy periods and came off, it wouldn't change that, would it?
Yeah. Very unlikely, because if you went on, so if you had heavy periods and you went on and your body wasn't, so while you're on that, you're not producing any of your own estrogen, so it's likely that it will make them a lot lighter, mm-hmm. and you'll of course bleed when you stop taking that pill. So you'll get a withdrawal bleed, and so therefore you can mimic a cycle of more like 28, 30 days, because that's how many pills you take and then you stop taking them. But if you just combine your pill packs, you could easily have a 60-day period, 60-day cycle on the pill. So it's not actually fixing anything. It's not regulating it. It is giving you more of a controlled bleed, right? Like, that you decide when you bleed, and also it just is more controlled, because we are controlling the amount of ethinoestradiol we're giving you. So, yeah, actually, that's probably a really good way of thinking it, a controlled bleed as opposed to your body controlling this. Mm-hmm. So, when you come off the pill, I've never seen anybody that's gone on the pill because they had irregular cycles, especially if they went on it when they were more in their 20s and had irregular cycles and or heavy bleeding. I've never seen a single patient come off it and be like, oh, yeah, actually,
they're normal now.
Yeah, normal now. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's just my bias, because I'm seeing people are coming to me when they've got problems, but yeah. I think that it's very, it'll be very rare, because there's nothing about the pill that is actually fixing that problem long term. It's not, you know, if we think about the reason that you've got that high estrogen in the first place, your body's not ovulating regularly. Well, it's not going to fix that, because it's just shutting off ovulation. So when you come off the pill, ovulation's going to be as irregular, if not more irregular. The pill can actually make you a little bit insulin resistant, depending on what pill it is. So actually, again, that's going to be potentially making that worse. Sometimes, if it's like a really anti-androgen pill for PCOS, that might not happen. But the research does show that in many cases, the pill makes you a little bit more insulin resistant. It's not that the pill is bad. I mean, I think that we're really vocal about this. We've done many podcasts about this. It's not that it's bad. It's just, it's neither good nor bad. It really depends on what your goals are and making sure that the treatment matches what your goals are, both now and long term. And it's just that informed consent piece. Because so many people that I see just say to me, man, if I knew what I know now, I would have made way more, like I would have made a lot of different decisions about my health and my life. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, your doctor doesn't have the 30 minutes to sit with you and give you a TED talk about all the different options, right? And that's what our job is to do, is provide you these free podcasts that you can understand all of your options, and you can go back and have a more educated conversation with your doctor because you know what the options are for you. But yeah, I think that in many cases it can be a real help, I think, as well for people in the short term. So while we're trying to fix the underlying problem, but there are also some things that we can't necessarily fix while you're on the pill. So if it is that your body is producing way more estrogen, so I'm just thinking of a couple of patients. So what I would do, I'd measure their estrogen on a very specific day of their cycle, and I'd also measure progesterone on that day, and I would then look at the difference between the two. So I would look and see, okay, because this is the other reason that we can actually have heavy periods is if our progesterone's a little bit low. So maybe our estrogen's kind of in the normal range, but our progesterone's low. And so I'd measure both and I'd see the difference between the two. And then that would then tell me what the treatment plan would need to be. So do we need to go about reducing estrogen? And if that's the case, then I'd use a specific set of herbs to do that and this can depend on the individual, what we use, how much we use, and for how long. So it's not something I can give you generic advice on, I'm sorry, over a podcast. It would have to be on an individual basis. And then also we might get their doctor to prescribe them some micronized progesterone to also increase that and extend that out. So and then also we'd look at, well, is there other things that are stopping their body from actually being able to excrete that estrogen? I'm just thinking of one patient where she was quite constipated. And so we really had to fix the constipation issue in order for her body to actually be able to excrete that estrogen as well. Whereas others, she actually wasn't constipated. She had quite loose bowels. But what I could see from her, I got her to tell me on it's called the Bristol stool chart. I got her to tell me what her stools look like. And actually her stools were quite loose, which meant that she just wasn't getting enough fiber. And so she was having to go to the bathroom about 3 times a day. So it wasn't constipation, but also it wasn't optimal for her to be able to actually excrete that. So like gut health wasn't optimal. Mm. And so we had to fix that alongside it. So those sorts of things we could do while you're on the pill, like the gut health stuff. But some of the other stuff like the herbal stuff and testing your estrogen and progesterone, we can't do while you're on the pill. So yeah, it just depends on who the person is and what the symptoms are, whether they stay on there to manage their heavy bleeding in the meantime while we figure this out. And then we'll also look at other reasons. So I'll also ask them about any pain with the heavy bleeding. So one, I'm just thinking of, she came to me for PCOS and she said, I have really intense pain with my period, especially when I'm exercising. And I was like, yeah, okay, describe this. And she was like, to the point of kind of vomiting. And I was like, okay, this is not, because you definitely can get some discomfort and like dull pain, especially with heavy period, just because you are losing that much tissue. But it's certainly not the kind that you are like vomiting, mm-hmm. curled up in a ball, not able to move, like not able to go to work, not able to go to school. Like that's the sort of where you draw the line and go, no, like this is not PCOS, this is something else. And so I got her to get referred to a gynecologist. She'd been to see a gynecologist before and they'd said, oh, there's nothing wrong. I said, go for another, like go and see this person, go for another referral. And it turned out that she had adenomyosis, which is muscle tissue growing inside the lining. And that was causing her the really significant pain and also was part and parcel of the heavy bleeding. So we sort of, and the high estrogen. So we have to, in order to help the adenomyosis, we have to kind of bring the estrogen down, which is a bit of a vicious cycle because it's also stimulating that. And then also there was a little bit of insulin resistance there we had to fix as well. So there's often, sometimes it's just quite a simple case of, okay, yes, let's just bring that estrogen down and increase the progesterone, or one or the other. But sometimes there's also more going on, like adenomyosis, endometriosis, or fibroids is another really common one as well.
Have you even heard of, what is it?
Adenomyosis.
Yeah,
I've
never heard of
it. Yeah, I agree that it is the kind of the poor cousin to endometriosis. Mm-hmm. A lot of people have now heard of endometriosis.
I thought I'd heard you wrong first. I was like, did she say endo?
Yeah, adeno. And yeah, it is the real poor cousin, because it is so debilitating. Mm-hmm. So no one speaks about it.
Yeah.
And it's one of the other really common causes for period pain. So if you have been like this patient, you know, went to the endo and gyno and they, so gynecologist, and they said, yeah, no, you don't have endometriosis. It's like, yeah, but it's not the only thing that can cause pain. Yeah. Like, thorough checking. And then I think it was through an MRI. I'm pretty sure that an MRI can pick up adenomyosis. So that's what she got done. And then they picked that up. But yeah, it is one of those things that is very really investigated or talked about, but is quite as, I don't know. I don't have either adenomyosis or endometriosis, but from what I can see from patients, as debilitating as endometriosis in that respect. So I do think that sometimes it can be a little bit more, but also often it is, especially in PCOS, the heavy bleeding is really commonly due to that insulin resistance and the high estrogen, low progesterone.
So they're the like main causes of it.
Yeah, I see. Yeah. I would say that probably accounts for 80%, 70 to 80% of what I see. If it's not already, like if there's no other, no, I wouldn't even say that. I would just say I would always ask about other symptoms like pain. Or we'll do a full, if someone's like got really heavy bleeding, we'll do a full questionnaire to look at symptoms of endometriosis, because that is probably another big thing about endometriosis is that it doesn't always cause pain and always severe pain. So there are other things that can indicate that. So we'll do a full investigation into symptoms around that. But if there's no other symptoms, and then I would just go straight into testing estrogen, progesterone, and then also insulin as well. Or looking at symptoms of insulin.
So you say like 70 to 80% of patients, it's kind of down to like the estrogen, progesterone, and insulin. So what's the other 30 to 20%?
That would be that adenomyosis, endometriosis, fibroids, or something else. There are a few other things less common that can cause it, but those would be the big three.
Yeah. So like if someone's got a really long cycle and then at the end of their cycle they have like a light period, why does that happen? Has there not been like a big buildup of like estrogen over those 60 days?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So sometimes our cycles can be long actually if we have low estrogen. So just because you have a long cycle doesn't necessarily mean that you'll have a heavy period. And actually that can be a really good indicator for us as to where to look, because sometimes it is actually that you need more estrogen support. You're actually not producing enough estrogen to produce that good quality egg that's therefore not ovulating. So if you're getting a really light period, like you're only having to use a panty liner, as I said before, it's probably more like intermenstrual bleeding and you still haven't ovulated. But that that would be a really good sign that actually your body's not producing enough estrogen. And there can be many reasons for this. So one really common one is not eating enough. Another common one is that you actually have something called hypothalamic amenorrhea, which is where, so your hypothalamus is in your brain. Amenorrhea is not getting a period. So hypothalamic amenorrhea is basically brain telling body, don't ovulate because it's not safe. And safety can come from many reasons. It can be that there's too much stress. It can be there's not enough food are probably the two common ones. And so you can actually have both PCOS and hypothalamic amenorrhea at the same time, but you can also just have hypothalamic amenorrhea. The symptoms are actually quite similar to PCOS in terms of that you can get irregular cycles and you can have cysts on the ovaries. And so some people actually get misdiagnosed. when they have that.
Yeah.
But just because you have long cycles or no period for a while doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to have heavy periods or you have all this estrogen. It's just if combined, like if you come to me and say, you know, I'm losing this much, I'm going through 6 menstrual cups in my period, or I'm going through at least 4 to 5 super tampons a day plus a super tampon over, plus a super pad overnight. And then I'm going to ask these questions like, okay, how long are your cycles? How long, like what, that's kind of my backwards working out, where do we start to look at what could be a treatment for this?
Mm-hmm.
What's the cause and therefore what's the treatment? Just like a mechanic, you know? You bring your car into me, I do a bit of diagnosis, and then we figure out what the fix is. Rather than you bring your car in and your mechanic goes, okay, like I wonder what thing we should choose today to to try. It's like,
yeah.
New motor, okay, you know, yeah. See you later, 10 grand.
It's much more focused.
Yeah, exactly. We've got to look for that problem. Yeah. And then, same thing, like going to your mechanic and being like, oh, my car's making a funny noise. Okay, well, 10 things could cause that funny noise. We've actually got to figure out what that thing is. Same thing, come to me, heavy periods. I'm like, okay, well, you know, 10 things can cause those heavy periods. Let's start asking some more questions, get to the bottom of like what's the most likely, maybe do some testing, you know, to get a confirmation of that, and then we work out what the fix is. And this is because I have that luxury of time with patients to do that, whereas this is what your doctor doesn't have. They're given 10 to 15 minutes with you, and like it's just ridiculous. Like there's no way you can go through all of that. And so therefore, to give you a solution within that time, the answer has to be the pill. And I mean, this is why our system is so wrong in so many ways. Because as I said before, yes, that might actually be a great thing for you. And yes, it might be that you want that for contraception or you want that, but you never get that chance to actually understand all of those pros and cons, all of the options, and then make a decision together about what that treatment plan should be, because there is just not that time.
Yeah.
So we have to utilize our doctors in the way that we can utilize them and understand those limitations. Because if you're just going to them, it's like, you know, it's like if your mechanic only had 10 minutes with your car. It's literally like, okay, well, could be any of one of these things. Probably the motor. Let's just put that in. And you're like, okay, how much is that going to cost? They're like, oh, 10 grand. You know, like you're not just going to say yes to that. But the thing is, like when it's our bodies, we don't really understand the long-term ramifications of that. It's not like necessarily a monetary thing. It's more of a what that's going to cost me in terms of my like downstream effects on my health. So, okay, so is this actually going to fix the problem? Like, so if I come off the pill in 2 or 3 years, is this going to be fixed? No.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, that's kind of what I wanted. What are the other options? And that's where, you know, we don't even really have time for that. Organic Initiative Period Care is available in Australia, New Zealand, and the US. I love that I can get them from my local supermarket in New Zealand, or Amazon, Thrive, and Whole Foods if you're in the US. And in Australia, several independent grocers, IGA, Ritchie's, and Drake's, to name a few. If you're in New Zealand or the US, you can also buy them direct online at oi4me.com. And, sneaky, sneaky, if you enter in the code OVIE, you'll get a 20% discount on your order, which if you're ordering a menstrual cup, that is actually quite massive. And just a tip, do what I've done. If you're getting a menstrual cup, or if you're already an owner of a menstrual cup, then buy a couple, because I, as I said in this podcast, recently went on a trip to Bali, forgot mine, and you couldn't find tampons anywhere. It was a bit of a nightmare. So I now have one in my toilet bag, in my drawer at work, and in my handbag. And given they last 3 years, that's only about $1 a period anyway. So far cheaper than anything else that I could buy.
So while someone's still figuring things out with their periods, what are some ways that they can manage it?
Yeah, good question. So I guess it's kind of, I think about this the same way as I think about any of the other symptoms like acne. It's like, while, you know, so topical treatments can be great for stopping those follicles getting clogged up and therefore reduce the likelihood that that's going to end up in a pustule, while we actually fix the problem, which is our body overproducing testosterone, which is then producing too much sebum or oil. So same thing with periods. It's like, okay, so how can we kind of like manage that flow, make it easier for you now? So I think in the simplest way is actually great period care. So this is where, I mean, I find period cups so helpful, just because they hold that much more volume. So if you think about a tampon, super tampon holds 12 mils of blood, whereas a menstrual fluid, whereas a cup can hold 25 mils. So just in terms of like regularity of having to change that, a cup can just be so much more, you know, you're not having to think about it quite as much. I think this is definitely for those that are getting more sort of heavy periods, where maybe it's that having to use five, you know, changing a super tampon every 3-4 hours, whereas if you're going through a super tampon every hour or 2 hours, that would be more termed flooding. And I think this is where it might need like more intervention, maybe the pill or something else in the meantime, while figuring this out, if that's right for that person, you know, if they tolerate that well, if everything else. So I'm not saying that this is the right thing for everybody, but if it is more that kind of manageable heaviness, then that's where I find a cup really helpful. And then also pairing that with period underwear. So, because that then also means that you just are a little bit more, you don't have to worry about it as much, because period underwear will also kind of mop up anything that where if you're getting kind of like
safety,
overflows and stuff like that. I mean, not that you have to be worried, you know, I think that people should be able to be past it. But most of us, you know, that just feels uncomfortable. We don't want that. So that can be a really good combo, is period cup and
underwear.
I actually just, as I said in the intro, I started using a period cup. So I started using always organic tampons, because I was just one of those easy swaps I could make that was reducing my body to less environmental toxins. I was like, well, you know, they're sitting on the supermarket shelf beside each other. I can literally just choose the one, the organic cotton. And then I was like, okay, next step from that is a period cup, because it's more environmental friendly. And this is one small thing that I can do to do that. And also, really cost effective. And also, what I didn't really realize was just convenience. And this is part of the convenience thing, is like actually, it's so convenient not having to change that every few hours.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, you can change it. So they recommend no more than sort of 8 hours. And I think that's a good recommendation. But, you know, it's certainly not having to worry about changing it every 2 hours. And so it's just quite, and also I love the fact that I can have, literally I have one period product for like the entire period, you know, going forward. So it's like I don't have to worry about, oh, do I have enough tampons in my bag today? It's like, well, so long as I've got my cup inserted, like that's it. I don't need anything else. Mm-hmm. It is, yeah, it's just quite, I find it really, really convenient and also really helpful for those heavier flows. So that's a really good way of managing that. Otherwise, you know, like those super tampons, super pads are also really good. One thing to note is that you shouldn't use, if you do have heavy periods, but you get a couple of heavy days and then it goes quite light, don't just use the same tampon throughout. I was actually talking to, again, Claire, the CEO of Organic Collective, about this the other day, and she reminded me of this, which I actually didn't really, I had heard, but I hadn't really taken much notice of, is that you really should use the right tampon for the right flow. So when it is heavy, using those super, but if it's not, using the light, because otherwise you would just, that is going to absorb a lot of the other fluid, moisture from, from your vagina, and then dry that out. So she reminded me of that, which I thought was a really good call, which is also why I love the cup, because you don't have to change that. You just literally, it's just that one product.
It's not like absorbing.
No, it's not. So. Yeah. And also too, I don't have to worry about having like a big cup and then a small cup. It's like, no, there's just literally the one, because that's what like fits me.
Yeah.
And.
Because you'd have to buy multiple packs of tampons.
Yeah, exactly. Well. Yeah. And make sure that you have them in your like, in your bag. Mm. So. Yeah, I think that's like as a quick thing, that's what I found really helpful. And I know that a lot of my patients that have heavy periods, they find the like the combination of whatever they're using, like tampons or cup plus period underwear, is so helpful for them, just as like that extra kind of safety net as well. Yeah. Or just period underwear on its own for those heavy days. Although I would say, I would be really interested, I haven't actually tried it, but for a lot of my patients, I think that they just would be a little bit dubious about just using period underwear in terms of how much, like if you think that period underwear would be, you know, similar to absorbency in terms of, like, I know the ones that I was testing the other day were moderate flow and they were like two tampons, and so a lot of my patients would be going through four tampons in a day. And I don't think I've seen on the market a period underwear that would do super heavy days, like four super tampons, right? I just don't think that's, and so therefore just the convenience where you then have to take another pair of period underwears with you during that day to change into for the absorbency. So I think on those really heavy days, combining them is a good, and then using them on their own on those lighter days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're nice at night as well.
Yeah, so nice at night. Yeah, love them for night. And also what I do love is using them if you've got irregular periods and you don't know when it's going to come, then using them as your normal underwear. And that's what I really loved, the other ones that we tried, because they were so comfortable. Like the other ones and the ones that I've had previously, you really do feel like you're wearing a pad or a nappy. Like whereas the other ones were, you can't really tell. You've had.
Yeah, I've got a pair as well that I like always wear at night.
You've had them for like 5 years though.
No, I haven't had them for that long now.
Someone else I was talking to has had them for like, since they started.
But yeah, some people have. I know that they last. I mean, they're such good quality as well.
Yeah, they are.
Like, yeah, I can see them like lasting for that long, yeah.
You've worn them and you wear them.
Yeah, I mainly wear them at night.
Yeah.
Just because they are really comfy, they just feel like wearing pyjamas kind of for me. But like 100% you could wear them through the day as well.
Yeah.
Like so, it's so thin, like you saying, but again, like you saying, you couldn't imagine a pair holding enough for like, what, six super tampons or whatever. Like I can't imagine if that would still be like thin.
Yeah,
if that was,
I just can't imagine that it would be, that it could hold that. Yeah. You know, like I think you just have to go by what the rating is on there. If it says it can hold three tampons worth, then that's it. Like, and if you know that you need more in those heavy days during the day, then don't expect it to be able to do more, because it can only absorb as much as it's been tested to absorb, really. And that's why I was quite interested in doing that absorbency test to actually see, do they absorb, which was actually a lot harder than it looked. It was really hard to like pour the liquid on in a way that it wouldn't just run off the sides or like in a way that would kind of mimic how like normal period flow would be, that it's not like all at once, it just like gushes out. I end up having to like use a syringe at some point and like, but yeah, they all did, because I think when I was researching for this podcast, I saw that there is no standard, or when period care says that it can absorb this much, it's not that they have to prove that anywhere, so it all is just dependent on the manufacturer telling you what they can. And it's the same thing.
It's like down to them to do the testing and then claim it. But there's no like.
Yeah, there's no independent or like proving that. So this is just what I read. I don't know. I don't work in that industry, so I can't like verify that. And it might be different in different countries.
You'd want like proof.
Totally. Yeah. But in saying that as well, there is, I know when we were looking into organic tampons and like environmental toxin and stuff, there's a lot that claim that they're organic, but they're not. It's just the outside layer, or say like with a pad, it's like the top layer is like organic cotton and then underneath is not.
Yeah.
So it's again,
like
it's like
a certain percentage needs to be it.
So it's, you know, like it can be some sketchy claims. Yeah, total greenwashing. Yeah. Whereas that's why I really loved the Organic Initiative ones, because they were like 100% organic cotton, which was super nice. But yeah, so I have found those really, really helpful. The one thing I did find hard though with using the cup was, I was like, at the start, I've got no idea how to use this. How do you insert this? Yeah. Mostly, how do you get it out without it spilling everywhere? Like, that's what I was like. So, and I've had quite a few questions about this. So I'm going to post a little reel on this on our Instagram about how you can insert them, where they should sit, like how high they should sit, and how to choose the right one for you. Although we've just kind of explained that, but I'll re-explain it, like the cup size, and then how to get them out, because there is a very particular method of how to like remove them so they don't suction on and not come out, but also that that it's just easy removal. And once you understand that, then it's like, oh, it makes so much sense. But when it can get quite intimidating at the start,
it can be a bit of a barrier. But I guess like you said, once you've like hacked it, it's like, oh sweet, and now I'm gonna save myself so much money.
Convenience.
Yeah,
I think that also to it, just that reducing that mental load. God, there's so much other thing we need to think about. Like, the number of tampons we have in our bag is one thing that we can just definitely wipe off our list.
Yep, absolutely. Because, I mean, I still use tampons now, but very keen to switch to a cup.
Yeah.
But, like, I've got some on my desk, some in my room, some in my bathroom. Like, you've just got to have, like, a pack everywhere, really.
Yeah. And especially if you've got irregular cycles and you just don't know when it's, like, coming, then that's why that period underwear is really good. But also, too, cups so helpful, because then it's just literally you just need to have the one thing in your bag.
Yeah.
Although I recently went to Bali, Indonesia, and I forgot it. And you can't get tampons almost anywhere over there. Yeah. In a lot of places in Southeast Asia, a lot of countries actually. So yeah, it was quite frustrating. I eventually did find some at the resort we were staying at. We were staying at this like surf camp, and I went to the reception. I was like, I've been to every supermarket anywhere here. No one's got tampons. Do you know where I can find them? She's like, oh yeah, we've got a small amount of stock at the shop, which sold like linen shirts and, you know, beachwear and stuff. And it was in this like cupboard behind the counter for about probably 20 New Zealand dollars a packet.
Like cigarettes.
Yeah, exactly. Literally, they were shoved in the back with the cigarettes and probably the vapes. And yeah, so that was, but it was just so annoying. So I actually went and bought another couple, so that I have like literally one just in my toilet bag at all time, because I do travel quite a bit, and so it's just handy not having to think about that. So I've got like one in my handbag, one in my toilet bag, one in my bathroom cupboard.
And considering how much are the cups per cup, like
30-ish or something like that, I think. But you
long-term,
know, if you
like,
oh well, you think about how much you'd spend. Like, I think they last 3 years, and so I think it works out at like $1 a period.
Yeah, that's crazy. So, like, and I, whenever I have to go buy tampons and I just see like what they're sometimes like $9, I'm just like, oh.
Yeah.
I don't want to pay $9 for this, but I'm going to have to.
Yeah, well, I remember at like university.
Yeah.
Like, loads of people would just skip their periods, like, put, like, pill packs together just because they were like, I don't really have the money to spend on period care.
Wow, yeah.
Like, literally, it was cheaper to get your pill prescription. I think it was $3 to get your pill prescription filled versus, like, and that was for, like, 3 months. But, yeah, that's why I think that period care and menstrual cups is the way to go. And then in terms of like actual treatment, Yeah, as I said, flooding, if it's more kind of flooding, definitely go and see your doctor, and it might need to be that there's some sort of, if it's really bad, then there's potentially, they definitely need to do some investigation as to why that's happening. But then in the meantime, maybe hormonal contraceptive or something like that is the right thing for you to stem that, because you can, you know, like, you can be losing a lot of blood. Actually, what we didn't even say is probably if you're losing more than 80 mils, an iron test is actually really important. And not just because you might have low iron, but actually because you might actually have really high ferritin or iron stores, which can be exacerbating insulin resistance. And this is probably what I see in about 30% of people with PCOS. So that, an iron test, and then, yeah, working with someone who can help you. So if Ovi is probably the best way that you can do that, at a really cost-effective way. So we can figure out what your drivers are, we can get you onto the right lifestyle treatments, and then also give you some intel as to what medications might also be really helpful for you that you can talk to your doctor about. Mm-hmm. So you can do that, even if you just want to come in and do the Ovi questionnaire, which is completely free, to just understand what those drivers are for you, mm-hmm. and where you might be able to quickly start some treatment to get on top of this.
Yeah.
So you can find that at ovi.io, ovie.io. So once you've gone through the questionnaire, then if you subscribe, you download the Ovi app, and then inside is your treatment plan, which is based on all those questions that you asked. So the only reason we ask these questions is because we actually want to know what's going on for you. We want to know what your goals are. We want to know what your symptoms are. Like, if fertility is not on the radar for you, we'll never talk to you about that, because that's not relevant for you. We'll talk to you about the symptoms that are relevant to you, like your PMS symptoms, or your sugar cravings, or your acne, or your hirsutism, or your regular periods. So that treatment plan is all completely designed to you and your symptoms and your PCOS drivers. And then what you'll find is that when actually we get to the bottom of what those drivers are and we start treating those, then we're not just treating one individual symptom like heavy periods. It's like, my periods have become better, but also so have my sugar cravings, so has my acne, so has, like, it's much easier to maintain my weight. My periods are starting to get more regular, because that's kind of the kingpin. We've identified those, that root cause or driver that then
everything else
falls into place.
Yeah,
exactly. So that's kind of what I would then also recommend. And it can happen quite quickly. It can happen within, you know, starting to see that symptom improvement. Most, I think 98% of OVs say start to see symptom improvement within 21 days. Yeah. Making positive change within 21 days. And then, so some of those other longer symptoms might take, you know, 3-6 months, but that's totally normal. And you're still way further ahead than what you would be if you had done nothing.
Yeah, like some people can get those results quickly, and then it's sustaining that, which is what OVI really teaches you, how to keep it going for the long run for life.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then also not being opposed to medication if that's the right thing for you, but giving you what things could be the best. So if you are looking at the pill, great, you are on the pill, great, we'll make sure that you're on the right one, not one that's actually making your symptoms worse.
Now stand by for our disclaimer. The information contained in this podcast has been prepared for the purpose of providing information, including about the PCOS Nutritionist products and services, and is designed to support clients' overall wellness. It is not intended to provide medical advice or designed to rectify, treat, or cure any specific medical conditions or diseases. Nothing stated or shared in our podcast is intended to be and must not be taken to be medical advice. Please seek the advice of professionals as appropriate regarding the evaluation of any specific information, opinion, advice, or content contained in our podcast.